As a public service, the Chevron Oil Company presents the Chevron School Broadcast. This is Hale Sparks with this week's reports on famous places in America through music and history.
Listen to that.
Oh, wow, it's so corny.
Oh, I could dance to that all night. And did once. Jack Hughes. Tall, blonde, crew cut. And he was pinned to somebody else, as I recall.
Mother, how shocking.
No, it didn't matter. Our world was going mad anyhow. It was 1940. Jack was leaving for his Navy pre-flight training at Pensacola, and somebody at the party, bless him, kept putting on the same Tommy Dorsey record.
Disgusting.
What? What's disgusting, Tommy Dorsey? My memories?
Oh, the whole silly thing. You coming in here while the party's going on to listen to junk like this? And the idea of 40 musicians sitting up there dressed in white dinner jackets grinding out a song called I'm Getting Sentimental Over You.
Hey, what's going on in here?
Oh, no, here they come, all the old folks.
It sounded like Dorsey.
Or was it Glenn Miller?
Play some more of those oldies but goodies for us, would you, Helen?
Yes, please, Helen. Something we can dance to.
Okay, I will play more of these old songs, but only if you insist.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we do.
But I won't be held responsible for the memories they bring back to each of you.
That's okay. Don't worry about that. I'll take my chances with that.
Somebody shut the door.
All right, I will.
Well, Sandy, what do you think?
It's incredible. You put on that silly music and people start coming out of the woodwork.
Well, that's because it's our music. 30 years from now, if you happen to hear a record of the Beatles singing Yellow Submarine, you might get sentimental, too. Memories, Sandy. We all have our memories.
I get this crazy picture of you and Dad dancing cheek to cheek to sloppy stuff like that.
Not in 1940, we weren't. I didn't even meet your father until the very last year of the war.
The war. With you people, it's always the war.
Sandy.
Your one big adventure, huh? Those groovy, glamorous 1940s when everybody was going out and trying to kill everybody else. And some very sick lady in Germany was making lampshades out of human skin.
Oh, we were young then. Your dad, Earl, Peter, Jane, Tom. I was about your age, 19. And it seemed as if the war sneaked up on our generation like a deadly fog. Once we were in it, there was little we could do. We had to fight. We had no choice.
No choice?
No. Oh, there may have been a time to stop the war before it really got started. But by 1940, it was too late. For all of us in the world, it was too late.
It may have been too late, but didn't you still at least try to stop it? Weren't you making peace marches or writing the president? What were you doing about the war in 1940?
Doing? Well, I'm afraid I was simply going to school and to parties and dancing to music like this. I won't play it again if it's going to make you sick.
No, go ahead. Now I'm sort of curious to see what your generation did do and didn't do with your lives in 1940.
Well, we danced to Dorsey's music and tried hard not to listen to the news from Europe and the Far East. America wasn't in the war yet, so we could dance and hope the beautiful music would drown out those other sounds.
another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine.
Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be freed, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit upland. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. So bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
But the sounds from overseas came through to us anyhow.
And?
I wonder if you can imagine what it was like to wake up suddenly in 1941 and discover that Hitler's Germany had conquered most of Europe, and that Japan held the China coast and was moving into the East Indies and Malaysia.
Then you did finally wake up.
Yes. Early one Sunday morning in December of 1941. We'd gone to bed the night before humming one of our songs and woke up the next morning to the sound of war. Oh, not just any war. Now it was our war.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
Oh, brother, were we ever mad? I was going to Cal. Yeah, at the time, I remember that Monday after Pearl Harbor when Roosevelt spoke. All us guys met at Jules Creamery. There's Pete here, and Woody, Phil.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Without a warning.
Yeah, with their peace envoys sitting in Washington.
Hey, what do you guys think severe damage means? That's what FDR said in his speech. Severe damage to American naval forces.
I'd hate to guess.
Wasn't the whole Pacific Fleet stationed in Hawaii?
Remember Ken Batchelder? Played center a couple of years ago. He's an ensign aboard the Arizona.
Wonder if
I don't know about you, but I'm enlisting today.
I'm with you, Earl.
Me too. What about you, Woody? You coming with us?
No. I'm gonna finish school first.
Oh, fine, Woody. The whole Japanese army may be landing at Ocean Beach tomorrow morning, but you go ahead to your anthro class.
Yeah.
Don't worry about a thing.
Come on, you guys. Lay off. It's just that I think I'll be more valuable to the country if I finish school.
Sure, Woody. You just stay here.
Yeah, you take
school.
Care of the girls for us and have a good time, pal. We'll go out and take care of the Japs and the Germans for you.
Come on, Earl. Let's get downtown to the recruiting office and get in line.
Get in line? You mean you people actually stood in line to go to war?
You're darn right we did. It was total war. The entire world was threatened. Some of us were pretty green kids, yet we knew we had to beat the Germans and the Japanese if we were going to survive. You didn't hear any of this should-we-be-fighting stuff. We're wrong and the other side is right. No, we were all together in that one.
And remember, Earl, those songs that came out during the first years of the war? Like, Let's Remember Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I remember.
And there was one called We Did It Before and We Can Do It Again.
Yeah, and don't forget Goodbye, Mama. I'm off to Yokohama.
or Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition.
Oh, come on. You people must be kidding.
Oh, no, we're not kidding, Earl. Jane, Tom?
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord. We're not going fishing.
Oh, stop. That's too much.
Oh, I wish we had some of those records. But I only collected the sloppy stuff, as Sandy calls it.
Yeah.
Oh, Doris, remember Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
Sure do, from that movie with Judy Garland,
The Wizard of Oz.
I think every jukebox in Texas had that song on it when the 34th Infantry Division was training there. They were getting us ready to fight Rommel in Africa, but we didn't know it then. Thank goodness.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
November 8th, 1942, Operation Torch. Code name for British American invasion of North Africa. Objective? Crush Rommel's Africa Corps. Landing sites, Casablanca, Oran.
What do names mean? To those of us who are there, they can still cause a shudder. Not names like North Africa, Sicily, Italy. To an infantryman, those names mean nothing. But mention places like Kasserine Pass, or Hill 609, or El Guitar, or words like ME-109, Mark III Tiger Tank, or the German 88.
On St. Valentine's Day, Field Marshal Rommel decided to attack west against the Americans. For the first time, we would be fighting the Americans. Our 10th and 21st Panzer Divisions broke through their line easily at Kasserine Pass, and the Big Mouth Yankees ran. We captured over 2,400 of them.
Wow, I just had a horrifying thought.
What's that, dear?
I just imagine that all around the world there are people your age full of sentimental thoughts about World War II. Englishmen, Russians, Chinese, Germans, Japanese. Horrifying thought.
2,400 of the Big Mouth Yankees.
Mention Kasserine Pass to a GI from the old 34th Division if you want to see a grown man wince.
Or names like Wake Island, Guam, Bataan and Corregidor to an old Marine.
Hi, Dad. Welcome to our party, our World War II party.
And have no fear. The Navy's here.
Mr. Mellon, you too?
Well, I didn't want you to miss any of the important battles of the war. You know, the ones fought by the United States Navy in the Coral Sea at Midway, off Savo Island.
And I'm going to make sure that the Air Force gets a fair shake, especially my Carl's old outfit. The 389th, the bomb group.
Help, I'm surrounded.
Don't worry, Sandy. Not all of us here have sentimental memories of the war. War or peace, my memories aren't pleasant ones. Don't forget that Dave and Mary Yamato are here with us, too.
And many others, I see. Oh, I'm afraid you're in for it, Sandy.
Yeah.
Okay, all you old folks, let's hear it. Go ahead and lay it on me.
Palermo, Gela, Messina.
Cape Gloucester, New Ireland.
Ploesti.
Salerno, Casino.
Rabaul, Truck.
Toracuto.
Truck.
Sakayosho. Katste. Ikugun Shoi.
Yoshio Sakai, 1st Lieutenant, 29th Infantry, Sendai Division, Japanese Imperial Army. Our motto, remember that death is lighter than a feather, but duty is heavier than a mountain. As we boarded the ships at Truk, we chanted, corpses drifting swollen in the sea
depths.
Corpses rotten in the mountain grass. We shall die for the emperor. We shall never look back. We were to land 22 miles east of the Tenaru River and attack the American 1st Marine Division. Our orders from General Hyakutake: quickly recapture and maintain the airfields at Guadalcanal.
The Guadalcanal jungle. Malaria, dengue fever, yellow jaundice and dysentery. Blood-sucking leeches and big green snakes that crawled into our sleeping bags at night. Tropical ulcers that ate into the outer covering of the bone. And fungus that festered and left the flesh encrusted and oozing. And, of course, the Japanese.
Good grief, you've just started and already I'm suffering from shell shock.
In the big war, Sandy, we called it battle fatigue. You should have seen the Marines who came back aboard ship after Tarawa. Wild-looking men with matted beards, their uniforms torn, reeking with sweat, blood, their faces gray from shock and fatigue. Some of them were strangely quiet. So quiet. Just sat there, staring. The thousand-yard stare, we called it.
Please. Enough blood for a while. How about some gentler stories? What was going on here in America?
Oh. Rationing?
We were finally making some good money, and we couldn't buy anything with it.
Yeah, gasoline, sugar, meat, butter, canned foods, all rationed.
Oh, we had blackouts.
Yeah, I remember those, yeah.
Hey there, Rattermakers! Get those lights out!
Henry, I told you these Venetian blinds wouldn't make good blackout curtains. Henry, where'd you go?
I'm filling a bathtub with water, Plutton, in case of incendiary attack.
I, ladies and gentlemen, was a member of the Ground Observer Corps. Yeah, I sat in a duck blind on the Sacramento River, reporting every single plane I saw to the Western Defense Command. There were over 500,000 of us aircraft spotters.
I worked at the USO. Remember that?
And a great migration of Americans was on.
Migration? What sort of migration?
Oh, people leaving farms and going to work in defense plants.
Servicemen traveling in all directions.
Wives and sweethearts of servicemen traveling to be with their loved ones.
Southern Negro sharecroppers and tenant farmers heading east, north, and west to work in shipyards and factories.
For once, I admit there were some decent jobs available for blacks. Although, listen to what the president of one of the large aircraft factories said.
While we are in complete sympathy with the Negro, it is against company policy to employ them as aircraft workers and mechanics, regardless of their training. There will be some jobs as janitors for Negroes.
There were people traveling everywhere, jammed aboard crowded trains and buses or driving cars on bald tires.
From Natchez to Mobile, from Boston to St. Joe, wherever the four winds blow.
And there was the enforced migration of Japanese Americans from the West Coast to detention camps in Arizona, Utah, and Wyoming. Dave and Mary know all about that.
What else was going on?
Men going into the service left a vacuum, and their jobs had to be filled by teenagers, older men.
Hildegard sang, they're either too young or too old.
And women?
Women doing what?
Oh, working on the railroad, driving taxicabs, working in service stations.
Working as air raid wardens.
Welding.
Riveting.
Rosie, the riveter.
Well, I'll tell you, Doris, I'm making more money than Herbie used to make before the war. And now that Herbie's stationed up in the Aleutians with nothing to spend his dough on, he's something it away, too.
Lucille, you should be putting that money into war bonds.
Oh, don't be a stupid eagle. It's my money, and I'm going to keep it where I can see it. Us riveters are hard-headed.
What else did women do?
We got V-mail letters, everything crowded onto that tiny blue stationery and cut up by the censor, and each night we sang, good night wherever you are.
And we sang, don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me.
Oh, and we all sang, Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week.
And remember, there are all kinds of government agencies. Seem like there are thousands of them. The OWI, the OPA, the WLB, WPB, WSA.
Yeah, and let's not forget that close to 500,000 women served in the armed forces. They joined the WAVES, the WACS, the SPARS.
Remember the Liberty Ship?
Yeah, and SNAFU, which stood for Situation Normal All Fouled Up.
The word gizmo.
G.I., government issue.
It was also the time of jitterbugging in a zoot suit.
I want a zoot suit with a reet pleat with a drape shape and a stuff cup.
Oh, wow, this stuff is too much. Let's go back to the war itself, okay? Now what?
It's the winter of 1942-43, Sandy, and it's snowing in Russia.
The sergeant told us these would be our last letters out of Stalingrad. We are surrounded by many Russian divisions, and the last plane out will take off tomorrow morning with this note. No sentiments, Father. Handshake for Lydia and Helena. Kiss for Mother. Kiss for Gerda. Regards to all the rest.
Tomorrow I shall set foot on the last bridge. Give me your hand so that crossing it won't be so hard.
Mariah, dear Mariah, if I could only see you just once more. When you light the candles, think of your father in Stalingrad.
During the night, I cry without control, like a child. What will all this lead to?
And if there should be a God, he is only with you in the hymnals and the prayers, in the ringing of the bells and the fragrance of the incense, but not in Stalingrad.
Then it was summer.
The bloody summer of 1943.
Precision daylight bombing attacks by the 8th Air Force against the centers of the German aircraft industry.
Target for today, the Fiesler Works at Castle Bettenhausen, which produces the Folk Wolf 190.
Okay, gang, that's enough. I give up. I surrender.
Oh, but the war's not over yet, Sandy.
Sure. It isn't.
No, we've only reached the winter of 1943. We've still got another year and a half to go.
But it's going on too long.
Yes, that's what we thought, too.
How about a joke?
Yes, good. We need one.
Well, in November of 1943, the Big Three, that was Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill, met at Tehran to discuss the Allied invasion of Europe. Well, anyhow, this correspondent walks up to the Big Three and he asks, "What's cooking?" And Churchill replies, "Hitler's goose."
Well, there's our theme music again.
Yes, I thought we better take a break before going on with the war.
Right. Hey, everybody. Remember how the old-time radio announcers used to close the big band music programs? Huh? And so, from the Royal Hawaiian Room, high atop the Hotel Astor in downtown Cleveland...
So, ladies and gentlemen, from the middle of World War II, where we've been dancing to the music of Tommy Dorsey, we bid you good night. You can go to sleep in this year of 1943, knowing that all your Japanese-American friends are safe and snug behind barbed wire in Wyoming. That your black friends are going out to help fight the war. But don't worry, they won't be allowed to mingle with your white sons. That the sharks in the South Pacific... No, that's too brutal. Just know that the wounded and the missing and the dead are piling up in the Pacific and in Russia and Italy and in the concentration camps of Germany. And soon there'll be plenty more strewn along the beaches of France. And the big question is it all worth it? Or as the German soldier at Stalingrad asked, what will all this lead to? Tune in tomorrow to find out when we resume World War II. In the meantime, sleep well, America. Sleep well.
This has been another program in the series Our Nation's Heritage, produced and presented as a public service by Chevron Oil Company.
World War II, Part 2. The war seemed to go on and on and on.
Oh, yeah. Jim was overseas for 32 months.
I was gone for 2 years.
Doug was 27 months in the South Pacific.
Don't get around much anymore. Yeah.
And David was gone for almost 2 years.
Yeah, I was shipped out in 42. Didn't come home till after VE Day.
When the lights go on again, all over the world.
The bloody summer of 1943 was over, and now the great Allied air attack on Germany began.
On Germany's eastern front, Hitler's armies were saying goodbye to Russia as the Russians drove them across the border into Poland.
Oh. And the Russians had gained air superiority.
The Heinkel whipped over again to the left in an attempt to dive. He looked good for Zirov, my wingman. I rolled to the right as Zirov dropped down after the German and began firing his cannon. At that moment, I fishing, the American peasants who had built our airplanes were there to witness the fight. I think they would have approved our use of their marvelous air cobras.
In the Pacific, our carrier planes attacked the Japanese fleet and air base at Truk and destroyed over 200 planes and sank over 30 ships.
The Allies landed in New Guinea.
The war in Italy went on.
Yeah, the Forgotten War, the Italian campaign. Slow, costly. Hard, bloody struggle from the first landings at Salerno in 1943 right up to the end of the war.
And the guys who fought there talked about places like Anzio.
Yeah, where the 3rd Infantry took their lumps.
And especially they remembered Cassino.
Oh, everybody got hurt there. Americans, British, French, Canadians, New Zealanders. There were Indians and Greeks, Senegalese, Brazilians. It was a true United Nations army.
You know, Earl, we should let Dave Yamato tell this story.
Yeah, you're right. Dave?
He wants to forget about Italy.
Well, someone should tell the story of American soldiers of Japanese ancestry, how hard they fought for this country, yes, how many medals and citations they won.
And how they suffered a higher percentage of casualties than any other American unit in the war.
Talk about paying your dues.
As Bill Malden put it, the Nisi collected enough metal in their bodies and on their chests to sink 6 battleships.
You mean that after putting you behind barbed wire, Dave, we then turned around and drafted you?
No, not drafted. David enlisted. In fact, he tried to enlist right after Pearl Harbor, same as Earl. It's all right, David. People should know.
I help you, fella?
Yes, sir. I'm here to enlist.
Enlist, huh? Well...
Isn't this the right place? It says so on a door. And out front is that poster with a picture of our uncle. Good old Uncle Sam saying, he wants me. He does want me, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, is he saying...
I was born in Portland, Oregon. My father comes from Hiroshima, but I'm an American citizen.
Well, sure you are, kid. I'd like to sign you up, but why don't you come back next week, huh? Yeah, come back and see us next week or... Hey, the Navy's right next door. Why don't you go see them?
Poor Dave. You tried to become an American soldier, and instead you ended up in Wyoming where American soldiers guarded you.
Yeah, the detention camps are really a sad part of our history.
Sure.
As long as we're telling sad stories, we ought to ask Tom to tell about trying to enlist in the Navy Air Corps.
Please, not Navy Air Corps. It's called Navy Air.
Oh, yeah.
Or V-5 Naval Flight Training, if you want to be technical.
I don't. I just want to hear Tom's story.
Ah, come on, Sandy, not now.
Tom, you should tell it.
Doris is right. Sandy should hear the sad tales of the war as well as the heroic ones.
Yeah, you have to take the bitter with the sweet, you know. I mean, it's just that war stories aren't all sweet.
Okay, gang, I'll tell you my story. We go back to 1942 when I went to see about enlisting in the Navy's V-5 program. I had 4 years of college and thought...
It's patriotic of you to come in and see us, but Navy Air doesn't take Negroes.
None?
None. Try the Army Air Corps.
So I went and saw the Army Air Corps.
I'm sorry, you better try the Army.
And did you try the Army, Tom?
Yeah, and they had an opening, especially for me.
Sure, sure. Happy to have you being a college graduate and all. We're just now making up some new labor battalions.
Later in the war, there was some breaking down of racial barriers in the armed forces, but not much. Heck, it took the Battle of the Bulge to get me transferred into a frontline infantry outfit.
Beautiful, huh? We took Negroes from the South where public drinking fountains and restrooms and even air raid shelters were segregated and sent them off to fight an enemy who, in Berlin, had separate but equal park benches. Those for Germans and those for Jews.
Where are we now?
It's June of 1944. The Allies were ready to take a crack at Hitler's Atlantic Wall.
Codename, Operation Overlord. Objective, the invasion of Europe. D-Day, June 6th, 1944.
This was a big moment.
The thing we'd been dreaming about and planning since the fall of France.
Both the emotional and strategic climax of World War II.
5,300 ships and craft were to carry the invasion force across the English Channel. The largest fleet in history.
And the greatest aerial armada in history. 12,000 planes were to bomb, strafe, and land elements of three airborne divisions in Normandy. The paratroopers would be the first to land, early in the morning of the 6th.
Okay, everybody got their cricket?
Yeah, I got mine.
Never mind, Mullins, I didn't ask to hear him. Just hang on to that toy. Might save your life. Two clicks at a signal, three clicks for a countersign. After you land, leave your chute and hot-foot it into the woods to the south of the drop zone. Okay? Stand up. Hook up. Check equipment. Okay, wait for the green light. Wait for the green light. Wait. There. Okay, troopers, let's go get him.
You must understand our confusion. The 709th Division guarded some 30 miles of Channel Coast, and the American and British chutists were dropping everywhere. Each of them carried a little cricket, a noisemaker, so they could locate each other in the dark. Click, 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 we heard, and tried to hunt them down before they could reform into large fighting units. One of the Americans got caught in the trees, and he was left hanging there, helpless, without a weapon, working his cricket. But we found him first.
Look, Herr Oberleutnant, up there.
Good morning, American cricket. Welcome to France.
Come on in yourself, Kraut.
But there were too many of them. We couldn't stop them all. And there was something different here. These Americans were nothing like the big-mouthed Yankees we'd captured in North Africa. These were hardened soldiers, and I remember thinking, perhaps we were not going to win the war after all.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky.
Why are you playing this?
Oh, for escape. I suppose that's why we welcome big Broadway musicals like Oklahoma and Carousel during the war.
Because they had nothing whatever to do with the war.
Yeah, remember that other song from Oklahoma? Everything's up to date in Kansas City. Yeah.
Or Surrey with the Fringe on top?
Yeah.
Ah, you people were into that cornball stuff. How about some of the upbeat things from that time, like, is you is or is you ain't my baby?
Or, this is the G.I. Jive, man alive. Yeah.
Oh, that's about when I first learned how to Susie Q.
Yeah.
Did you say Susie Q?
Sure.
I danced, Step Honey.
Like the Balboa, the flea hop, the Jersey bounce. Jersey.
They call it the Jersey bounce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know why the moron pushed the cow over the cliff? Because he wanted to hear the Jersey bounce.
Oh. Earl, that's terrible.
Well, we had moron jokes, and we also had a neat little phrase made up of three words that was written on walls, doors, and ceilings all over the world.
The same three words?
The same three. There weren't any places you could go without discovering that some American G.I. had been there before you and had written, Kilroy was here. Huh?
Come on, you people, be serious. There's a war going on.
Yeah, that's what we kept reminding ourselves. One of the classic things to say to a hoarder or a slacker was, don't you know there's a war on?
Yeah, right.
You
know there's a war on.
That's pretty. What is it?
A geisha girl in Japan singing. Well, we had Oklahoma to help us escape thinking about the war, and they had something like this.
Dearest Toshi, I'm so tired of war. Do you recall when I enlisted? I was 19, and here I am, 7 years later, still at it. I think often of you and our baby and hope you're not suffering too much from the winter cold. Here on Saipan, it is always too hot.
To win the war against Japan in the Pacific, America and her allies were forced to island hop from Guadalcanal and New Guinea north toward the Japanese mainland. Mm-hmm. To the Marines fell the task of assaulting some of the toughest strongholds. Endless arguments have been waged over whether each of these landings was necessary. It's too late for that. Necessary or not, they were ordered. They were made. Tarawa, Saipan, Guam, Tinian, Peleliu.
What are we celebrating? The end of the war, I hope?
No, not yet. It's only August of 1944. But there's good news. Paris has been liberated from the Germans.
Now the Germans were on the run. By September 12th, the American First Army was crossing the German border east of Aachen.
October, November, we kept right after them. And then in December, trouble.
We gamble everything now. We cannot fail.
We will not disappoint the Führer and the Fatherland, who created the sword of retribution.
We will march day and night if necessary. Fight all the time. On toward the enemy and through him. Your orders, all out attack.
At 5:30 on the morning of December 16th, the Germans hit us with three armies, some 19 divisions, and the roads from Saint-Vie to Bastogne were clogged with retreating Americans. The Battle of the Bulge had begun. And behind the broken and shattered American units came the panzers in a final gigantic effort for Führer and Fatherland. But not all the Americans ran.
We turned off the stoves in the cook tent when someone said the Germans were almost upon us. They were coming through the woods on our right flank. We took our personal weapons and got into the air raid trench in front of the supply tent.
Keep down there,
clerks,
down.
Messmen, one supply sergeant, and one cook. We could hear the Germans coming through the trees. Then silence. Grenades started raining down on us, dozens of them, potato mashers that made a flat blast when detonated, and big concussion grenades that bounced and exploded with a sharp, ear-cracking noise. When the first machine pistol started to chatter, I raised up and saw the enemy coming toward the trench from the right. They were already on top of the fighting holes at that end of the trench, the flash from their weapons lighting their faces, squinting, excited faces. I was busy shooting over Miller's shoulder in the confusion, aiming only at the center of the enemy swarm.
With men like that, we finally stopped the German attack. Then, with men like Tom here, who was called up out of a labor battalion to bolster Patton's Third Army, we counterattacked, and on December 28th started pushing the Germans back out of the Bulge. We were late celebrating Christmas that year.
And Minnie didn't live long enough to celebrate at all. That December of 1944 was the bloodiest month of the war for American combat troops.
Where are we, back in Bastogne?
No, Sandy. We're back in the United States. At the Japanese-American detention camp at Heart Mountain, Wyoming. Winter, 1944.
When they first took us from our homes in 1942, we were kept at Santa Anita Racetrack near Los Angeles for many months. Living in a horse stall was not good, but when we arrived at Heart Mountain, my spirits sank. It looked like a real concentration camp, with high barbed wire fences, watchtowers, and guards holding rifles. And the winters, so cold.
You've got to realize, Sandy, that many of us were moved from the area around Los Angeles to a place where the winter temperatures got down to 30 below. And someone in camp wrote,
"Snow upon the rooftop, snow upon the coal, winter in Wyoming, winter in my soul."
In March of 45, Allied troops began crossing the Rhine River at Remagen.
By this time, MacArthur had returned to the Philippines and American Army forces had recaptured Manila, Bataan, and Corregidor.
The largest Marine force ever to go into battle assaulted a tiny rock 700 miles from Japan, Iwo Jima.
The American 3rd and 7th Army troops attacked in the Sa Basin, secured it in 1 week.
Slow down, you guys. You're going too fast.
No, it's too late. We couldn't slow down if we wanted to. For better or for worse, the American war machine was in high gear, and we couldn't be stopped. Both Germany and Japan were doomed. It was now only a matter of time.
Dear Father, of the whole division, only 52 men are still in fighting condition. Bleier is still alive, so is Hartlieb. Little Dagen lost both his arms. We still have 2 machine guns and 400 rounds of ammunition, 1 mortar, and 10 shells. You can be sure everything will end decently. It is a little early at 23, I know.
In overrunning Germany, the Allied troops came upon the slave labor camps. The extermination camps, the death camps.
Dachau,
Belsen,
Auschwitz, Treblinka,
Buchenwald,
Majdanek.
Here the Nazis kept millions of men, women, and children of all nationalities. Here they systematically killed more than 6 million people, mostly Jews and Poles in the gas chambers.
And witnessing this horror, we realized what savagery we as human beings were capable of perpetrating in the name of national honor.
Now was the time for the last big battle of World War II.
The greatest sea-air battle in history.
Okinawa.
It was also the time of the divine wind. The Japanese kamikaze. The bong, bong, bong of general quarters sounded day and night aboard the ships of the invasion fleet. And by the end of the first month, the Japanese had sunk 20 U.S. ships and had damaged 157. But this was the fleet that came to stay. And while soldiers and Marines ashore engaged in a bloody struggle against the 32nd Imperial Army, the American fleet met and suffered the divine wind from Japan. USS Drexler, Gaiety, Aaron Ward, Anthony, Murray, Brain, Casson Young, Sandoval, Rodman, Laffey, Forrest, Gilligan, Loy, Mary Livermore, Brown Victory, Franklin, Intrepid, Emmons, Logan Victory, Enterprise, Essex, Abel, Tennessee, Idaho, Adams, Skylark, Indianapolis.
On April 12th came shocking news. President Roosevelt was dead.
May 8th. Germany surrendered. It was VE Day.
Victory in Europe!
On June 6th, the battle for Okinawa ended.
In the rubble of Shuri Castle, one of the strong points of the Japanese line, we dug up two antique bells, scarred and dented by shellfire. And on them was an inscription, written in Chinese. And how will the bell sound? It will echo far and wide like a peal of thunder, but with utmost purity. And evil men, hearing the bell, will be saved.
August 6th, the American bomber Enola Gay took off from Tinian.
Yes, we all know what came next.
I was 10. We were staying at the cottage of Koba, and I was down at the river swimming. All of a sudden, there was an airplane. It came from down the river. I looked up at the sky. I was at the bottom of the valley, so I could only see a narrow strip of sky between the hillsides. Suddenly, there was an awful light in the sky toward Urakami. From down the river came a noise like thunder. It was a terrific rush of wind. The leaves were torn off all the trees and came racing along. It was getting dark and cold very fast. I thought an airplane must have crashed into the sun.
Japan surrendered. VJ Day.
And now, the accounting.
Battle deaths?
The United States, 295,000.
British Commonwealth, 450,000.
China, 2,200,000.
Russia, 7,500,000.
Germany, 2,800,000.
Japan, 1,500,000.
And what was the grand total?
You mean counting soldiers and civilians?
Yes. How many human beings?
Total dead as a result of World War II? 40 million men, women, and children.
God help us. We were all numb. The carnage. The cruelty.
The pain. The whole world in pain.
And already the Russians were initiating an iron-fisted rule over the countries that they had liberated. And in China, the communists were beginning a new war to seize control of that country.
Who cared what Russia was doing? We were going home.
At last,
our war was over.
And we could finally go home.
Home. Home.
The three-car mail train rattled through the sparse Nebraska wheat fields west of North Platte. I sat alone in the coach, looking out at the wheat fields, dreading the job I had to perform. I was the official honor guard for the body of a young American soldier being shipped home. Two cars forward in the mail car were the remains of Private Howard Trask of Stillwell, Nebraska. When the train made its stop at Stillwell, the family was waiting. The dead soldier's young widow and his parents. The body was loaded into a hearse and taken to a funeral home, and I went with the Trasks to their farm just outside town. I had to sit there with the family and say the words that sound so stupid and artificial except to those who know nothing about combat. Your husband was a brave man. His death was quick and painless. He died instantly.
I see.
He was well-liked by everybody.
I'm glad to hear that. People around here used to make fun of Howard.
He was always afraid of not being liked. Howard was supposed to come home before he went overseas. Supposed to come in on the evening train. And I had the porch light lit for him. He never came. But in a long time, I got a nice dish he sent from England. Broken, but hand-painted and nice. And I just kept the porch light on every night in case they sent him home real sudden.
You said there was another child beside the baby?
Yes, Stevie. He's out in the yard playing. Most likely playing his toy harmonica.
Yes, I can hear the harmonica.
He's only six, but he said he wanted to learn 100 songs by the time his daddy came home.
This has been another program in the series, Our Nation's Heritage, produced and presented as a public service by Chevron Oil Company.